tuned to one of the most popular call-in programs on Christian radio, The Bible Answer Man with Hank Hanegraaff. Today, we wind up our conversation with author, speaker, and host of the popular television program Faith Under Fire, Lee Strobel. We've been looking at several of Lee's books, including The Case for a Creator and its companion student edition. To order your copies of any of the books by Lee Strobel, just call us toll-free at 888-7000-CRI. Or you can find us on the internet at www.equip.org. Now, here to get us started once again is the host of The Bible Answer Man, Hank Hanegraaff.
And this is day two of my discussion with Lee Strobel on The Case for a Creator, the student edition. A journalist investigates scientific evidence that points towards God. It is a must resource. It is available to you when you give us a call at 888-7000-CRI or log into the World Wide Web at equip.org. Before we get to Lee, I wanted to make a couple of comments about Steven Pinker, who's a psychology professor at Harvard University, and there's something I'm going to ask Lee to respond to specifically. But again, before we get to that, I want to respond to something he says in the August 15th edition of Time magazine, and this is under a subtitle or subforum in Time magazine. In fact, it's called a Time Forum. Can you believe in God and evolution? Steven Pinker, again, this Harvard University professor, says many people who accept evolution still feel that a belief in God is necessary to give life meaning and to justify morality. But that is exactly backward. In practice, says Pinker, religion has given us stonings, inquisitions, and 9/11. Morality comes from a commitment to treat others as we wish to be treated, which follows from the realization that none of us is the sole occupant of the universe. Like physical evolution, it does not require a white-coated technician in the sky. And what I want to respond to specifically is his statement that in practice religion has given us stonings, inquisitions, and 9/11. Now, there is a root to this kind of fuzzy thinking. And that root is prejudice, plain and simple. It is a religious bias or prejudice. What he is saying is absolutely false, and he should, as a professor at Harvard, know better. The truth is, more people were killed by secularist regimes in the 20th century than in all religious persecutions. And Oz Guinness makes the point that this is all religious persecutions in Western history and perhaps in all of history. And that is a very significant point to make. Look, the 20th century has witnessed more bloodshed than previous centuries of history. And we must not fail to recognize that this is the ripened fruit of atheistic philosophies. Look at Pol Pot. He murdered 2 million of his own countrymen. Stalin, 30 million. Mao, 65 million. If you look at Nazism and communist, secularist ideologies, you see blood that drips from the hands of atheistic, materialistic mentalities. So when you hear that religion is responsible for all the bloodshed and all the problems, that's just prejudiced. Secularist ideologies, and this is not, again, fundamentalist propaganda. This is plain, old, hard, factual evidence. Secularist ideologies in the 20th century, and I would argue even today, in the 21st century, has blood dripping from its hands. So let's not buy this kind of fuzzy thinking. Again, this is an idiosyncratic form of fundamentalism that is fond of making dogmatic assertions without producing defensible arguments. I have Lee on the air with me today. We're talking about his book, The Case for a Creator. First of all, Lee, good to have you on the broadcast. Your passion is very stimulating to all of us.
Well, same with you, Hank. I couldn't agree with you more in terms of what you just talked about. You're absolutely right about that. And Pinker, that isn't the only error he makes in his little offering there in Time magazine, but certainly probably the most egregious, and I think you did well in setting that straight.
Well, let's talk about that for a moment, because Steven Pinker says, and again, this is the Harvard University professor in Time magazine, he's quoted as saying, it's natural to think that living things must be the handiwork of a designer. But it was also natural to think that the sun went around the earth. Overcoming naive impressions to figure out how things really work is one of humanity's highest callings. He goes on to say, our own bodies are riddled with quirks that no competent engineer would have planned but to disclose a history of trial and error tinkering. And then he gives a few examples. A retina installed backwards, a seminal duct that hooks over the ureter like a garden hose snagged on a tree, goosebumps that uselessly try to warm us by fluffing up long-gone fur. The moral design of nature is as, and listen to this rhetoric, as bungled as its engineering design. What twisted sadist would have invented a parasite that blinds millions of people or a gene that covers babies with excruciating blisters? To adapt a Yiddish expression about God, if an intelligent designer lived on Earth, people would break his windows. Your response?
Yeah, I mean, unbelievably uninformed and misinformed. You know, he gives, for example, this idea of the eye, the retina, he says, is installed backward. And there you go. You can't have an intelligent designer if you put a retina in backwards. It just shows that this is a product of tinkering of evolution over eons of time. And I deal with this in my book, The Case for a Creator, because I investigated whether or not the retina of the eye is backwards. And, you know, he is absolutely wrong in terms of his conclusion. This is a bad design. With this is a trade-off. In other words, the way the retina is inverted in the eye allows the vast amount of oxygen that vertebrates need for their eyes. Now, it does create a small blind spot, but that's not a problem because we have two eyes and the two blind spots don't overlap. So the eye is actually an incredible design. And there's a biologist, George Ayoub. Now, he is a professor whose expertise is the cellular physiology of the retina. So, you know, here you've got Pinker in Time magazine saying the retina is backwards, and that's an illustration the intelligent designer is not very intelligent. Let's go to a guy who is a cellular physiologist of the retina. And here's what he says. The vertebrae retina provides an excellent example of functional, though non-intuitive, design. The design of the retina is responsible for its high acuity and sensitivity. He says it is simply untrue that the retina is demonstrably suboptimal, nor is it easy to conceive how it might be modified without significantly decreasing its function. So, you know, let's just not take what these Harvard professors say at face value. Let's investigate their claims and see if they hold up. And there's one example among many that show that it's just not true.
Yeah, I think Pinker needs to rise above naive impressions, just as you say, figure out how goosebumps work and how the retina works and so forth. And as you point out, we need to see the difference between optimal design and constrained optimization, or the art of compromise among conflicting objectives. Your book, The Case for a Creator, let's talk about it. We mentioned this yesterday on the broadcast, but it bears repeating. It's developed in a very special way to meet the needs of students. In other words, this is the kind of literature that a student will not only be able to read but assimilate.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, I worked with Jane Vogel, who's an expert in communicating to young people, so we could produce a book that is written in the style and the approach that young people can optimize in terms of the way they apply it in their own mind. And so, you know, I'm thrilled with it as a resource for students who are going back to school this fall who need to be prepared for the kind of things they're going to be hearing in the classroom. If they hear someone say, hey, the retina is in backwards, so obviously there's no intelligent designer, no intelligent engineer would create an eye that way, to be able to know, wait a minute, that's just not true. It is an excellent design that considers the various trade-offs that need to be made and creates an eye that is excellent in its functionality.
One of the things you do in the book, which I think is really great, is you give the evidence of biochemistry, and you use the example of mouse traps and molecular machines, and in the process, quote, Darwin's Black Box by Michael Behe.
Yeah, in fact, I flew out to Pennsylvania to interview Michael Behe for the book, and sit down with him for a long period of time to have him articulate his evidence in this particular regard, which I think is extremely powerful. In fact, it was none other than Darwin himself who challenged people and basically said, look, if it could be demonstrated that any complex organ existed, which could not possibly have been formed by numerous successive slight modifications, then my theory would absolutely break down. Well, that's exactly what Michael Behe has demonstrated. Biological systems, things like the little motor on the back of some bacteria, things like the cascade of processes that lead to blood clotting, that cannot be explained away by Darwinism, because all of the parts of these processes must be in place for them to work at all. If evolution supposedly created them in pieces over time, they wouldn't have functioned at all because all the parts would not be present, and therefore Darwinism, under its theory, would not have kept that incomplete and ineffective system around. And so he has really demonstrated several examples of biological systems which cannot be explained by Darwinism, but are very well explained by an intelligent designer. In fact, one of them, just real quickly, that I love is this little motor on the back of some bacteria that can spin at 10,000 RPMs, stop in a quarter turn, and then turn backward at 10,000 RPMs. This is something on the microscopic level that Dr. Howard Berg of Harvard University said is the most efficient motor in the universe. Well, you have to have certain components in place and working together for that to function. And if they're not, it won't work at all. And under the Darwinistic theory, you cannot explain away how it came into being, but you can if you go to an alternative theory, which is an intelligent designer.
So you're saying, based on Darwin's own statement, which you quoted, if it could be demonstrated, says Darwin, that any complex organ existed which could not possibly have been formed by numerous successive slight modifications, my theory would absolutely break down. So according to Darwin, his theory is broken down in an age of scientific enlightenment, because we have moved beyond 19th century science.
You're exactly right. And discoveries in these recent years that Michael Behe and others have made have really, I think, you know, put the stake through the heart of the grandest claims of Darwinism. And there have been scientists, by the way, who tried to challenge Behe and tried to say, oh, wait a minute, I'll give some explanation here, and they try to come up with a Darwinistic explanation. But every time they have, Behe has been able to come back and demonstrate that they're either injecting intelligent design into their own rebuttal, or they're failing to account for the full totality of the evidence. So this stands really unrefuted as a body of evidence that refutes Darwinism.
One of the things I love about your book is you, for example, use Michael Behe's mousetrap, and since he came out with his book, there have been many people that have tried to pull the stake back out of the heart and said, you know, look, his illustration of a mousetrap is inherently flawed. What you do in the book is you take the arguments against his mousetrap illustration and you show that the arguments against the illustration are actually in themselves flawed and bogus.
Exactly. And Behe has done a great job of taking some of the scientific literature that attempts to dismantle his explanation and showing how it's riddled with errors, and it just does not stand up to scrutiny. And I think it's an illustration of the desperate way in which some Darwinists are trying to grasp at straws to disprove what Dr. Behe has come up with. And by the way, this is a guy with a PhD, teaches at Lehigh University. He's published in peer-reviewed journals. He is a well-respected scientist, and his claim that his so-called irreducibly complex biological systems are best explained by an intelligent designer so far stands unfazed by the criticism of the Darwinists.
I'm really excited to have Lee Strobel on the broadcast. As always, he is just not only a very informative speaker, but a great writer. He has a particular talent in writing, and the case for a creator is uniquely suited for your student, particularly as students are going back to school. This is the kind of book you want to put in the hands of students. Perhaps your student isn't listening, but you are. Get this and give it to your student, pack it in their bag as they're headed off for college or whatever level of academic institution they're going into. This is a book that will help inoculate them against the kind of rhetoric that's out there. There's a lot of useful rhetoric out there, but you need to plow beneath the rhetoric and find out whether there's any kind of a foundation that upholds the rhetoric. The Case for a Creator, it's written in user-friendly language, and this is the kind of thing that we need to have as Christians to give an answer or reason for for the hope that lies within us with gentleness and with respect. I mentioned this yesterday, but we're presenting this as a six-pack of Strobel's because what we want you to do is get six of them, and we've made it very affordable. Believe it or not, six of them for under $40, $39.99, one penny under $40, but that's, I guess, a marketing device. But look, it's a great deal. Any way you look at it, you can give five of them away. You're getting a great savings, and this becomes then an evangelistic tool. We also have a Case for a Creator toolkit, which includes my book, Fatal Flaws, What Evolutionists Don't Want You to Know, a book by Philip Johnson, who Lee and I both respect and love as a friend, Defeating Darwinism by Opening Minds, and then Lee's book, The Case for a Creator Student Edition, all three of these for $25. So a number of different packages available for you when you go to the phone lines and call our resource consultants at 888-7000-CRI or log into the World Wide Web at EQUIP, equip.org. We've got blogs on the web based on what we're talking about with Lee Strobel. In addition to that, you can get all of this information through the mail at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, 28271. Remember that zip code, 28271. We're going to be back on the other side of the break with people who don't necessarily agree with what Lee and I are saying. Stay tuned. We're going to have an engaging segment right after the break.
We'll be back with our guest, Lee Strobel and Hank, in just a few minutes. If you'd like to order any of the products discussed today, our resource consultants are standing by at 888-7000-CRI. They can help with any of your resource needs. That number again is 888-7000-CRI. You can also find us on the internet by logging on to our website at www.equip.org. Stay with us. There's more of our conversation coming up right after the break. Now, more than ever, today's believer who wants to stay informed on today's religious movements and scriptural insights needs to subscribe to the Christian Research Journal. Each journal gives you the information you need to know about what you believe. Here's what you'll find in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. Is there a definitive Bible translation? The journal gives you input on what makes a Bible version good, bad, or ugly. What is the relationship between the Christian faith and psychology? Can psychology be loyal to the Christian faith and therefore truly help those with emotional problems? The latest journal brings you an accurate critique. Can Mormon doctrines, such as baptism for the dead, really be found in the writings of the early Christians? Or is this Mormon heresy being passed off as orthodoxy? Find out in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. Get 6 issues for $30 or 12 issues for $54. Call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-CRI. Or find out more on our website at equip.org.
Has this happened to you?
There is no God. Science has proved it.
What about the missing links?
Science and faith don't mix. Christianity is superstition.
If you've ever found yourself cornered in a discussion like this to prove there is a God, you know there are many points of argument that a non-believer raises. Equip yourself to provide them with the facts. Pick up your copy of The Case for a Creator by Lee Strobel. Call 888-7000-CRI to order. Strobel utilizes his journalistic background to investigate the evidence that points toward God. He interviews an array of experts from various scientific fields, paleontology, physics, astronomy, genetics, and more. Their conclusions provide excellent cases for intelligent design. The Case for a Creator. Your copy is waiting for you when you call CRI at 888-7000-CRI. 888-7000-CRI. You'll also find The Case for a Creator on our website at equip.org.
How are your Bible answer skills?
Daddy, what is heaven like?
Questions about your faith can come from all sorts of places.
Dad, what distinguishes Christianity from other religions?
On all sorts of topics.
Okay, smart guy, if there is a God, why does he allow bad things to happen to good people?
Are you ready to answer these questions? The most important questions about your faith demand the best answers available. Now Hank Hanegraaff delivers them in the Bible Answer Book. Hank Hanegraaff has taken the hottest faith-related questions and given you the best responses. on a range of spiritual, doctrinal, and cultural topics, each meticulously answered by Hank himself. Topics range from salvation and evangelism to spiritual growth in church fellowship to questions on spiritual warfare and much more. The Bible Answer Book by Hank Hanegraaff, available in hardback or audiobook. Call 888-7000-CRI to order. That's 888-7000-CRI. Or order online at equip.org. Because you never know when you'll be the one with the answer.
It's time to rejoin the conversation now with our guest, Lee Strobel, and the host of The Bible Answer Man, Hank Hanegraaff.
And again, Lee Strobel on the air with me. We're talking about his book, The Case for a Creator. A journalist investigates scientific evidence that points towards God. And of course, Lee is not alone. More and more scientists confronted with startling, cutting-edge evidence from many areas of research no longer believe that the universe just happened or that life arose by mere chance. Behind a universe of staggeringly complex biochemical systems, they're seeing signs of a master designer. Again, Lee, your book is must reading for students, not only at the college level, but also high school and junior high, I think, could benefit greatly from this book.
Well, yeah, I think junior high school kids definitely could access it and benefit from it. I hope high school kids certainly. And I think a lot of high school kids can read the adult version. I think 18, 17, even, you know, some 16-year-olds might enjoy going a little more in-depth and reading that version as well.
Yeah, your books, they read like fast-paced novels. That's one of the things I really appreciate about your writing.
Okay.
You're producing evidence, but you're doing it in a format that's so accessible, eminently readable, and you want to keep turning the page. In the process, you get a lot of information in your mind that you can use. And one of the things I want to talk about for just a moment is this is not to demonstrate our mental acumen, is it? It's to use our well-reasoned answer as an opportunity to share the good news.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, was it Luther who said that apologetics or defense of the faith is the handmaiden to evangelism? In other words, you know, it's a means to an end, so to speak. In other words, we need to help people who have questions, people who are seekers or skeptics, to knock down those barriers that are between them and God and help them understand the truth about who God is and how they can know Him personally. So I always see apologetics sort of like if you're driving down the highway and you see those little construction barriers along the side of the road. You know, I see many people, as I did when I was an atheist, had a lot of questions that were in the way of their spiritual journey. And when we can provide answers, we just knock down those barriers so that they can come face to face with God.
Yeah, well said. The Case for a Creator, available when you give us a call at 888-7000-CRI, also at equip.org. on the World Wide Web. A lot of callers, some that disagree with Lee, are already heading for the hills, I think, but we'll take as many calls as we possibly can. Eli, St. Joe, Indiana. Hi, Eli.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Pleasure.
Hi. I'm a college student at a specifically an engineering and science institution in Indiana, and I find a lot of adversity when I try and talk about creation.
Yeah.
For example, I have to do a project or like a thesis sort of thing in the field of astronomy before I can graduate. And basically, if my thesis doesn't fit within the realm of evolution or the acceptable age of the universe or those sorts of things, then it's not taken seriously.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering what your thoughts were on how to be taken seriously as a scientist who is also a creationist.
Well, you know, I think when we can cite credible scientists who have credentials in the scientific realm and who provide not only assertions about things like astronomy, physics, cosmology, and so forth, but can back them up with the scientific data, I think we ought to be free to be able to quote them and draw conclusions from that data that are logical and that make sense. Now, it may be sometimes you're in school and you have to kind of take the approach of saying, look, I'm going to provide an answer, the answer that I think you want me to provide you, not because I believe it to be true, but because this is the one I know you're after, you know, I'll have an alternative viewpoint based on other evidence that convinces me otherwise. But sometimes we have to give the teacher what they expect us to provide them to show that we've mastered the material that they've given us. Doesn't mean we have to believe it. You know, and doesn't mean that we can't provide counter evidence to build our own case.
Okay?
Yeah, thanks.
Sure.
You're welcome. I want to go back to the phone lines. We're going to go to Prothagamus in Tacoma, Washington next. Hi.
Hi.
You're on with Lee Strobel.
I had a question about the scientific method.
Yes.
If the method itself is supposed to be based on observation, how can you say that intelligent design, you observe the creator and then you formulate the theories off of that?
Well, you know, there are lots, if you read things of philosophy of science, you get into all kinds of definitions of what science is about. You know, if it is purely on observation, then obviously things like cosmology, archaeology, and things like that, you've got some serious problems in terms of making accepting them as scientific disciplines. But what we do is we do observe those things from the past and draw logical conclusions from them. To give you an example, if you were to walk down the beach and you were to see the ripples in the sand, you would say, based on that observation and things that you know to be true based on previous observations, that that was probably made by the waves, the action of the waves in the sand. That makes sense. It's consistent with what you've seen before, and it would be an acceptable conclusion based on the evidence you're observing. If you walk down the beach and you see John loves Mary and a big heart around it and an arrow through the heart, you would probably not draw the conclusion that the random actions of the waves have made that in the sand. Why? Because it's information. And when we observe where we see information in books or computer codes or a drawing on a cave wall, whatever it is, whenever information is present, there is an intelligence behind it. And so you can, I think, come to some logical conclusions based on observing the world as we see it today that point toward the existence of an intelligent designer.
Doesn't necessarily point to Jesus Christ.
Well, that's a good question. And the answer, is, in a sense, is no. And in a sense, is yes. And let me explain what I mean by that. I think science can only take us so far. In my book, I demonstrate that the logical conclusions from the scientific discoveries of the last 50 years point toward the existence of a creator who is consistent with the creator described in Scripture. It is not consistent with deism, which is the idea that God created the universe and walked away from it. It's not consistent with polytheism, the belief that there are many gods. It's not consistent with pantheism, which is that God is coexistent with the universe and so forth. So we can rule out some belief systems based on the scientific evidence, but it does leave us with, you know, a step we need to take if we're going to come to the conclusion that Jesus is God. And then we have to turn to history, and we have to look at, did Jesus live, did he claim to be the Son of God, and did he prove it by returning from the dead? And that kind of stuff I deal with in my book, The Case for Christ.
One of the things I think we need to point out, too, is that there's a fault in the premise of the question, Lee, because the intelligent design movement does not begin with the theological presupposition that God created the universe. Rather, the central thesis is that purely natural random processes are not sufficient to account for the specified complexity that we can empirically observe in information rich systems in our information rich universe.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We have to look at where does the evidence most logically point. What explanation best accounts for the range of evidence that we have? And more than 400 scientists from leading institutions have signed a statement publicly, a scientific dissent from Darwinism, saying that the evidence of science is not best explained by Darwinism. And we need to, you know, we need to open our minds and consider other models that better account for the evidence. And I believe the existence of an intelligent designer does better account for the range of evidence we see from a wide range of disciplines.
So we're saying that intelligent design is really science with an open mind. And there are many sciences that already have well-developed methods for distinguishing between intelligent causes and undirected natural causes, like archaeology or cryptology or forensics and so forth.
Exactly. We depend on that all the time in those areas, and the same underpinnings of logic also underpin the intelligent design movement.
Again, we're talking to Lee Strobel, The Case for a Creator. The student edition is available through the Christian Research Institute. Under $9. Give us a call at 888-7000-CRI or log into the World Wide Web at equip.org. Back to the phone lines. Beth in Michigan, you're on with Lee Strobel. Hi, Beth.
Hi. Good evening,
Beth.
Gentlemen. I'm a high school science teacher.
Cool.
And when I just have to confirm with you and affirm with you the first thing I had when I was going through my master's program, that they truly are close-minded. We started talking about evolution in quite a few of the classes, and I would throw out a question to some of their comments that have all kinds of assumptions behind it.
Yeah.
And, you know, exactly, they knew where I was headed. And, you know, he said, well, we're not here to debate Christianity. You know, we're here to talk about science. And I said, well, you know, why can't we just discuss this as adults? This is a university. Why can't we hear both sides, you know, have a discussion? I mean, they wouldn't even open the door towards me. And it was so frustrating that I was willing to be open, but yet they wanted to shut all kinds of conversations.
Yeah, that's why I like the way Hank puts it. Intelligent design is science with an open mind, and that's exactly
right.
What you're saying.
They claim to be open-minded through the universities. You know, oh, we want to hear all these philosophies. We want to teach, you know, all these different kinds of religions, approaches. We have to be open-minded to all, you know, types of diversity.
Right.
But yet when it comes to science, which should be the premier area of being open-minded, they are not.
Yep. It's interesting when you watch the debates that happen on television sometimes. I have a TV show that's been on this last year called Faith Under Fire, where we had scientists and science philosophers debating intelligent design. And you see this on other TV shows time after time, where the intelligent design advocate will present scientific data and scientific facts pointing in the direction of an intelligent designer. And then the other guy, the Darwinist, comes on and accuses them of injecting religion into science. And you go, well, wait a minute, he never said anything about religion. He's talking about scientific data.
Mm-hmm, exactly. I remember one walk we had through the Detroit Zoo here with a zoologist, and he would talk about, it was during adaptations, a couple of units, mm-hmm. and, you know, he'd talk about these animals making decisions that they didn't need to have, you know, this type of paw or that type of tail. And so this, you know, their tail that they have now is what evolved. I'm like,
right.
And so I just asked back. And
yep.
I said, you know, so they had to have a very intelligent brain. So where are they on the spectrum of brains, you know?
Yeah. Well, Stephen Jay Gould used to point to the panda's thumb and say, well, that looks jerry-rigged and it looks not well-designed. And yet it's awfully efficient at scraping away the bark off of bamboo. So who's to say it's not, you know, it functions exceedingly well. Who's to say it's not well designed?
Kind of interesting you bring up Stephen Jay Gould. He died a number of years ago, but I remember in the August 1999 edition of Time magazine, he said that evolution is as well documented as any phenomenon in science, as well documented as the Earth's revolution around the sun. And I think it's just truly amazing that a professor living in an age of scientific enlightenment would make that kind of dogmatic declaration.
So often they jump back and forth between microevolution and macroevolution.
Yeah.
You know, because if you look at microevolution, which is changes within a kind of animal. For instance, we have 200 different varieties of dogs, and you can see some variation there. And everybody agrees there's been some variation, and that microevolution is true. But then they make that leap to macroevolution, which is that there's one common ancestor, some single cell in billions of years ago, and that all of life emerged from that over the eons of time. That is where the evidence is lacking. That's where the fossil evidence is lacking. That's where the evidence of the Cambridge explosion, the sudden development of a number of phyla created in a short period of geologic time and so forth, the evidence just doesn't support the conclusion that because we have microevolution, the small change in variation in the beak size of finches and things like that, that therefore all creation came from one single source.
Yeah, and I think without data demonstrating that that physical processes can produce metaphysical realities, there's no warrant for dogmatically declaring that humans evolved from hominids. How do you account for ego and ethos or sex? We need to account for those. More than that, we need to be always ready to give an answer, and The Case for a Creator does just that. The student edition available when you give us a call at 888-ASK-HANK or log on to the World Wide Web at equip.org. We'll be right back on the other side of the break with more questions for Lee Strobel.
Hank will be back with our guest Lee Strobel in just a bit. In the meantime, jot this down, www.equip.org. That's CRI's website, and there you'll find a tremendous amount of information and resources on a great many subjects central to the Christian faith. You can also call us toll-free at 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-700-0274. Or write to CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip 28271. There's more ahead with our guest, Lee Strobel, so stay with us.
Has this happened to you?
There is no God. Science has proved it.
What about the missing links?
Science and faith don't mix. Christianity is superstition.
If you've ever found yourself cornered in a discussion like this to prove there is a God, you know there are many points of argument that a non-believer raises. Equip yourself to provide them with the facts. Pick up your copy of The Case for a Creator by Lee Strobel. Call 888-7000-CRI to order. Strobel utilizes his journalistic background to investigate the evidence that points toward God. He interviews an array of experts from various scientific fields, paleontology, physics, astronomy, genetics, and more. Their conclusions provide excellent cases for intelligent design. The Case for a Creator. Your copy is waiting for you when you call CRI at 888-7000-CRI. 888-7000-CRI. You'll also find The Case for a Creator on our website at equip.org.
I am full of thankfulness to my Lord for such a ministry as you.
I can't wait to listen to it Monday through Friday.
Do you ever wonder if your donations to CRI can make that big a difference? Well, let these comments testify that it makes all the difference. But we can't conduct this ministry alone. We need your prayerful and financial involvement as well. Jesus said to store up treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust nor thief can take it away. What better way to invest in eternity than to help CRI change the lives of thousands every day with one phone call to CRI at 888-7000-CRI and making a donation? You can be a part of this life-changing movement. When you give a financial gift to CRI, we'd like to send you one of Hank's newest books as our token of thanks. Call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-CRI. You can also give online at equip.org.
Thank you, and God bless you.
The revelation of Jesus Christ, which God gave him to show his servants what must soon take place. He made it known by sending his angel to his servant John, who testifies to everything he saw. That is, the Word of God and the testimony of Jesus Christ. Blessed is the one who reads the words of this prophecy, and blessed are those who hear it and take to heart what is written in it, because the time is near.
Imagine a letter that could tell your future, written in code. Deciphering it could set you free. What's inside reveals the truth about the end of the world, but possessing it could kill you. The Last Disciple by Hank Hanegraaff and Sigmund Brouwer. Available from CRI by calling 888-7000-CRI or by ordering directly from our website at www.equip.org.
It's time to rejoin the conversation now with our guest, Lee Strobel, and the host of The Bible Answer Man, Hank Hanegraaff.
And before I go back to Lee Strobel and The Case for a Creator, the student edition, which we are promoting on this edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast, I want to mention that we have moved to Charlotte, North Carolina, and we have a wonderful facility here. But there's a reminder for all of you that listen to the broadcast and benefit from this one-of-a-kind ministry outreach that we can't continue without your support, especially as we recover the tremendous cost that comes from moving from California to North Carolina. And there are three ways that you can really help us at this point. You can send a gift to P.O. Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, or you can visit us on the internet at equip.org and give online, or you can simply call one of our resource consultants at 888-7000-CRI. And of course, when you call them, we also want you to order The Case for a Creator, the student edition. It is just a great book for students of all levels, whether we're talking about college, high school, junior high. This is the book to get. Again, 888-7000 CRI or log into the World Wide Web at equip.org. Back to the phone lines. Erwin, you're on with Lee Strobel. Erwin.
Hi.
Erwin, I'm sorry. Erwin, you are on with Lee Strobel.
Hi, Erwin.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how you doing?
I'm good. My question is, I don't know if your book would be easy enough reading for the person I have in mind. Mm-hmm. I've come to the conclusion that I think you need to be somewhat informed and intelligent to understand how evolution can't mm-hmm. be possible.
Yeah.
So I'm looking for something real short, real easy that somebody who doesn't want to read about it would, you know.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, that's sort of the person I had in mind. The Case for Creator Student Edition is only 95 pages.
Mm-hmm.
And then it has, you know, 100 pages total if you include the footnotes, but just 95 pages. So, and it's written in a way that I think junior high school and high school kids certainly can access. I worked with Jane Vogel, who spent her life communicating and learning how to communicate to young people. And she's the one who helped fashion this book in a form that would make it easily accessible by young folks. And as Hank mentioned, you know, a lot of adults like the student edition because it is sort of a quick hit, and it does give you the information in bite-sized pieces that people who don't want to read the entire adult version may benefit from.
Okay, great.
So I hope it helps.
I hope so, too. Thank you very much.
Sure. Yeah, and Erwin, I can vouch for that as the father of nine kids. In fact, I was driving around with my 8-year-old, Faith, yesterday, and she was asking some questions that are dealt with in The Case for a Creator. And I used some of the material right out of The Case for a Creator with my daughter, Faith, last night. Welcome back to the phone lines. Karen, Falls Creek, Oregon. You're on with Lee Strobel.
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi.
Hi. Well, I have a couple comments, and there's a question in here somewhere. What I haven't heard is, well, I was almost 40 before I even knew there was evidence for intelligent design or creation. I've been studying it for 15 years, but what I never hear is that scientists, the founding fathers of science, were creationists.
Mm-hmm.
And the founder of every discipline, biology and physics and chemistry, was a creationist.
You're absolutely right.
And I don't hear that argument.
Yeah.
And by excluding supernaturalism, they're excluding the very premise that science was founded on, like there is a lawmaker.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that Muslims, Christians, and Jews believe in a creator, and as far as I'm concerned, in public schools, our tax monies are not being covered, and there's viewpoint discrimination.
Yeah, well, I agree with you on all of that. In fact, some of the latest polling that's been done shows that 55% of adults think that kids should be taught intelligent design or creationism along with evolution. And a majority of adults, 54%, said they don't believe that humans had developed from earlier species. And that's grown from 45% as recently as 1994.
Yeah.
So you're right. I think the public just, using its own common sense,
mm-hmm.
looks at the grandest claims of Darwin and says, "It says, you know, this just doesn't add up. This just doesn't compute." And you're right to say that Christianity, especially, is a faith that has encouraged science through the centuries, because we've been encouraged to discover the creation that God has left for us as a way of discovering more about Him. And so scientists have pursued the various scientific disciplines. You know, if you trace that back, the greatest scientists were all those who came from a Christian worldview.
Let me give you some examples of that. Leonardo da Vinci, considered by some to be the real founder of modern science, was a committed creationist. Robert Boyle, the father of modern chemistry, as well as perhaps the greatest physical scientist of his generation, was a great apologist for the Genesis account of origins. Isaac Newton, a prodigious intellect. He developed calculus, discovered the law of gravity, designed the first reflecting telescope. He not only refuted atheism, but also strongly defended the biblical account of creationism. Louis Pasteur, well known for the process of pasteurization and for utterly demolishing the concept of spontaneous generation, was devoutly religious and strongly opposed Darwinian evolution, and many other examples could be given, including Blaise Pascal, the famous philosopher and mathematician. So all kinds of men of science were also men of God.
Absolutely.
I want to go back to the phone lines. We'll talk to Jeff in Inglewood, California. You're on with Lee Strobel. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Lee. Hi, Hank. Thank you for taking my call.
I'm an atheist. I'm calling in to challenge Lee and ask him a question.
Sure.
If the universe was so wonderfully and marvelously made for human beings, then how come 99% of it seems to be inhospitable to life?
Mm-hmm.
For example, 99% of our solar system is made up of useless, dangerous, mm-hmm. inhospitable junk to life, such as asteroids, comets, planet Mars, Venus. It seems to be designed by an incompetent designer rather than an omnipotent designer.
Yeah, I that's an interesting argument, one that I used to make when I was an atheist, so I appreciate you bringing it up. You know, I interviewed for my book Dr. Guillermo Gonzalez, who's an astronomer, PhD, teaches at a public university in Iowa. Has written
right, I read his book.
Okay, great guy. Wrote Privileged Planet, another
Privileged
book.
Privileged Planet, right.
He specifically points out that in order for the process of the creation of stars, of planets, of hospitable planets like our own to be created requires, in many ways, large amounts of time and large amounts of space. So it's a little disingenuous for us to be able to sit back and say, well, that's a waste of material or a waste of God's resources if he were creating. Well, if God is really omnipotent and omniscient and so forth, as we believe that he is, then he's not constrained by a lack of materials and is not wasteful in creating something that's very large in order to provide a place for us that is optimally designed for us to live. And I think the argument that Gonzalez makes and others have made, in fact, two secular scientists from University of Washington in their book Rare Earth make the same basic argument that life is probably very rare, if not unique, complex life on Earth because of the conditions that are so finely tuned that need to be in place for life to exist. So I look at the vastness of the universe and the creation and sustaining of life on Earth as a big argument in favor of the existence of a creator, as opposed to one that tries to shoot it down.
Yeah, to ask that question with such dogmatism after having read Gonzalez's book is simply a case of being closed-minded to my way of thinking. How can you watch The Privileged Planet or read the information without recognizing that the only way you can see the fine tuning is by being on this planet? This planet is uniquely situated in the solar system such that you can even investigate these things.
Yeah, that's one of Gonzalez's great findings, which is when you overlay not just the fine tuning of the universe that provides a place for us to have a habitable environment, but also a place that allows us to do science in an amazing number of ways, I think points again toward a creator who not just created us, but wants us to investigate the universe, wants us to explore, because through that we find out more about God.
I want to go back to the phone lines. We'll talk to Jay in Charlottesville, Virginia. Hi, Jay, you're on with Lee Strobel.
Hi, well, thank you for taking my call. I'm basically agnostic. And so I believe both points of view. One of the things that you were talking about, though, was the Big Bang Theory and that there has to be an intelligence, basically, to be able to create that. My question is very simple, then. If there has to be an intelligence to create, basically, life or an origin, a beginning and an end, then who created God?
Yeah, that's a common question to say. I asked that when I was an atheist. In fact, on my TV show, that was raised by Michael Shermer, the atheist, in debating Dr. Stephen Meyer, who's one of the proponents of intelligent design, PhD at Cambridge. And, you know, the answer is that everything that has a beginning has a cause. So, in other words, if something begins, there must be a cause behind it. The universe began to exist, therefore the universe has a cause. God, by definition, did not begin to exist. He always existed, therefore he does not need a creator.
So he's the uncaused first cause, and to suppose that because the universe had a cause, the cause of the universe has to have a cause simply leads to a logical dead end. An infinite regression of finite causes doesn't answer the question of source. It really makes the effects more numerous. And Lee, we talked about this a number of times, but I think it bears repeating. Simple logic dictates that the universe is not merely an illusion. It didn't spring out of nothing. Nothing comes from nothing. Nothing ever could. and it has not eternally existed. The law of entropy predicts that a universe that has eternally existed would have died an eternity ago of heat loss. So the only philosophically plausible possibility that remains is that the universe was made by an unmade cause greater than itself.
Yeah, exactly. When you look at the totality of the evidence, what is the best explanation that best accounts for the evidence? Is it naturalism? No, there's so many holes in it, it doesn't well account for the vast array of evidence. But when we look at the evidence for, or when we look at the explanation of an intelligent designer, it does account for the evidence in a very compelling and powerful way. As well as we mentioned, I think it was on, may have been in yesterday's show, but the evidence that we can see from cosmology, which is the beginning of the universe, and from physics and so forth, does rule out certain other belief systems. In other words, pantheism and polytheism, which is the existence of many gods, and deism, which is a god who formed the universe and abandoned it, those are pretty much ruled out by the logical inferences we can make from cosmology and from physics. And so when we do that, we're left with really Christianity, Judaism, maybe Islam, to some degree, and you know, we can narrow it down even further when we look at history and the evidence for Jesus being the Son of God who was resurrected from the dead. And I think the evidence of science and history put together is a, I think, a insurmountable case, an unchallengeable case for the truth of the Christian worldview.
Well, Lee, I want to thank you for two engaging hours and for your work as a as an author. You just bless us all, and you're doing a great work
well,
for the kingdom of Christ.
Well, and believe me, I believe in what you're doing out there as well. I'm so sorry you left Southern California, but I know that you're going to be able to do ministry more efficiently and out there in Charlotte. And we miss you out here, and believe in what you're doing.
God bless you, my friend.
Same here.
Lee Strobel, he's the author of The Case for a Creator. Again, it is just a great resource for students, and that's why we're featuring the student edition. It is available when you give us a call at 888-7000-CRI. You can also get it on the World Wide Web at equip.org, or when you write us at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina. The zip code is 28271, 28271. One. The student edition of The Case for a Creator, we're also making available to you for only $39.99, six of them, so you can give them away as an evangelistic tool. One for under $9, six for $39.99. Thanks again for tuning in to this edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. We'll be back next time with more of the show. Please stay tuned for that.
Thanks for joining us today. Before we go, we want to thank Lee Strobel for being our guest these last 2 days. To find out more about any of Lee Strobel's books, such as The Case for a Creator or The Case for Christ, just check out our website at www.equip.org. You can also reach us by phone and talk to one of our resource consultants at 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-700-0274. Or if you prefer, you can write CRI at P.O. Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip 28271. Please join us again tomorrow for more of the Bible Answer Man. This has been a production of the Christian Research Institute.
Has this happened to you?
There is no God. Science has proved it.
What about the missing links?
Science and faith don't mix. Christianity is superstition.
If you've ever found yourself cornered in a discussion like this, to prove there is a God, you know there are many points of argument that a non-believer raises. Equip yourself to provide them with the facts. Pick up your copy of The Case for a Creator by Lee Strobel. Call 888-7000-CRI to order. Strobel utilizes his journalistic background to investigate the evidence that points toward God. He interviews an array of experts from various scientific fields, paleontology, physics, astronomy, genetics, and more. Their conclusions provide excellent cases for intelligent design. The Case for a Creator. Your copy is waiting for you when you call CRI at 888-7000-CRI. 888-7000-CRI. You'll also find The Case for a Creator on our website at equip.org.